Job 10 verse 8, which is this stunning verse in the midst of many other things in the book of Job, which is a bit like the clay on the potter's wheel. Job 10 verse 8. The immense and numerous ways in which the potter makes us. Your hands shaped me and made me. Which paints and portrays this incredible number of ways in which God has made us, and varieties. And we have, over the last few weeks and months since we began this in January, we have been looking at the acronym SHAPE in the context of spiritual gifts, which is, or finding ministries rather, which is spiritual gifts, heart, attitude, and personality, and today experiences. And that reminds me, I just meant to sort of tag, how many of you from the end of last week went away and discovered your personalities? Anybody? Yep. And was it a surprise? Wasn't a surprise. Yeah. Was it a surprise to anyone else? Yeah, Ray's nodding. Ray's nodding, Angie. Okay. That's fascinating. I mean, we must have shifted last week about 25 personality profiles. And any of you want the book by Florence Littow, I've got that on my desk at home. But that's a really key thing. If you've not done it, really, really, the thing about that was understanding the way that God has made you and then using that for the strength of finding and using your ministry. So today, we're going to wrap up this little mini-series with experiences. And I want to just say to you that we have all been shaped by many different experiences. Some of them were your choice alone, but many of them were beyond your control. This morning I look out at you, and what are we here today? We must be about 50, 60 people, something like that today. And I look at you, and I think to myself, this is a room of extraordinary experiences. This is a room of extraordinary experiences. You have, through each of your individual lives, if you cared to share this morning, and some of you would find that actually too difficult to share, if you cared to share this morning what you have been through, then in terms of actually being equipped and the potential in this room, that would be absolutely mind-blowing. And today, this morning, the church, like many other churches, are sleeping through this. Literally, we are the untapped potential because we are allowing all of those experiences to simply sink and not be used. And the church is asleep, like many other churches, in terms of using what has happened to us. We are not allowing those to be used by God. And if you think about experiences, let's just open this up now. We have all kinds of different experiences. There are family and relational experiences. And people, perhaps we're all the same on this. We end up looking at folk and we go, well, you know, I can see in you, you're just like da 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 da. And we go, oh, no, I'm not. I don't want to be like them. Thank you very much. And then we might have educational experiences through the schools we've been through, or the books, or the conferences, or the training we've had. We have all kinds of experiences. And there are spiritual experiences too. Meaningful times with God. There are mountaintop experiences where we say, wow, I know, I met God. God was with me. I could touch him, I could feel him, I could see him. And then there are valley experiences. Valley experiences. I've shared with you before as a congregation that some years back, not too many years back, there was a time when I said, I cannot pray. I cannot pray. And God was, I felt away from me. God was angry. God was, I couldn't reach God. And for me, pastoring a church, I guess that's pretty like, kind of basic, that you think, my goodness me, that was an extraordinary, painful time through which I had to say to people, help, I cannot pray. And those experiences shape us. I'm sure that that was similar for you. There would be vocational experiences in our career, in our job. And then there would be the painful experiences. What painful experiences are here this morning in the multiplicity of each of our lives, which we have either shared or we are yet to share? Because this is a way in which the church, in terms of our ministries, are sleeping. I remember as a teenager, in what was a youth Bible study, really, just finding the extraordinary privilege of sitting next to people who were able to vocalize their own struggles. As a teenager, that's not what you do as a teenager. Why as a teenager? Hey, we're fine. Teenagers are absolutely fine, you know, and there's nothing wrong with me. But to sit in a Bible study and actually with other teenagers then to say, actually, I'm really struggling with this. And sitting next to them, you go, oh, I'm so grateful you shared that. Because that's exactly how I feel. And then you think, well, perhaps this faith thing is actually not about being strong. It's about understanding that other people have traveled that road too. So sharing our painful experiences. And we have good allies with this in terms of the Bible. Remember the story of Joseph in the Bible. He was a man who, for everything went wrong for him in the first half of his life. If you ever want to examine the story of Joseph, you know, shove the whole musical thing from the West End aside. Shove that aside. Because the lessons of Joseph's life are immense. He was betrayed by his brothers. He was sold into slavery. He was taken into a foreign country. He was sold to a master. He was falsely accused of rape. He was put into prison. And his life was all downhill for the first half of his life. I mean, you couldn't really write this stuff. It is an incredible story. Yet later, at the end of his life, he could say to his brothers, Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, you, Lord, intended, or rather to his brothers, you intended to harm me. But God intended it for good. I mean, it is an immense thing. That in that disastrous moment in Joseph's life, he could testify, you, Lord, intended it for good. And God has a personal plan for your life, for my life. God has made you for a purpose, and he has a plan for your life. He's also uniquely designed experiences for you, which are both personal and purposeful. And I look back at the struggles that I had in my own life, and boy, oh boy, I would not choose to go through them. I would not choose to go through the things that I've been through, just as way that you would not choose to have gone through the things that you've gone through. And yet, I have learned more about myself and God's grace in my life through them. And so, I can say this morning that I am grateful that God has led me through them. I'm grateful that God put them into my flight path. Because it is through them that God has taught me so many things. And so this morning, let's just hop, skip, jump through this. There are three intentions that God has for the experiences in your life. Three intentions. And John chapter 13, verse 7, Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm doing. That's great. Jesus could say that to us now. God, I don't realize what you're trying to do. But later, he says, you will understand. And most of us understand that straight away. Hindsight is 20/20. And usually perspective comes after the fact that rather than during the experience. It's a lot easier to look back on life and say, That's what's happening. But when you're in the thick of it, you don't see where God is. That's true, isn't it? And we think, and we complain, and we moan, and we flash out, and we throw our hands around. God, where are you? But God's always there. God is always there. So three things that we need to take note of. First, the experiences teach us. First of all, experiences teach us to trust God. Experiences teach us to trust God. 2 Corinthians 1 verse 9, this happens so we might learn to trust not in ourselves but in God. You're never going to know that God is all you need until he's all you have. You're never going to know that God is all you need until he's all you have. Sometimes God knocks out the props from underneath you. And everything falls flat and things don't go the way you wanted them to go because you'll never know God is all you need until he's all you've got. I could speak personally, I'm sure some of you too could, about how God has allowed that to happen in my life. And I've had nothing left but God. So God allows experiences to teach you that he alone is trustworthy. That's the first one, to teach me to trust God. Secondly, God allows us these experiences to build our character. And in the school of life, we don't grow character by reading about it. We don't even go to conferences to learn about it. We grow character, frankly, by experiencing it, by making right choices when you're tempted to do the wrong things. Romans 5:4, we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope. Character, what is your character like? What is your character like? For instance, in the character quality of integrity. Integrity is learned when you do the right thing, when it's much easier to do the wrong thing, and you're tempted to do the easy thing. Endurance is learned when you keep on keeping on, when everything in you wants to give it up. Responsibility is learned when you keep your commitments, even at a great personal cost, because you said you'd do it. So experiences build our character. Thirdly, experiences accomplish God's purpose. There's a purpose behind it. For instance, Paul, I love this story, and it is so mind-blowing. I invite you to get your head around it too. Paul was taken prisoner to Rome. We know that one. It's kind of there in the book of Acts. He was taken prisoner falsely. He was handcuffed. And then in a shipwreck on the way to Rome. I mean, this is like the poor, you know, person who gets struck by lightning 50 times. And you think, goodness me, I'm not going to walk near to him. Paul is having a really bad time. And then he was jailed in a dark dungeon jail. He was chained, to a Roman soldier 24 hours a day. This is horrific stuff. I get this, though. Who was he chained to? He was chained to one of Caesar's own guards. Extraordinary. Yet in spite of everything that happens to Paul, in Philippians 1 verse 12, he says, whatever's happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. I mean, you've got to give him grace. If it was me, perhaps if it was you, you'd want to say, actually, God, I hated what you did. Can that go in the Bible? But Paul comes out and says, no, whatever happened has served to advance the gospel. It's been tough on me right now, but there's a greater purpose behind it. So what was that greater purpose? This is fantastic. This is mind-blowing. One, he was getting to witness to a captive audience. Just mind-blowing. I mean, you try and share the gospel down in the town center. First few words, and they're off. Imagine being chained to the people. I'm going to tell you. This is what happens to Paul. So there was a guard chained to him every day. And as soon as that guard went off duty, he went back to Caesar's inner palace and shared some things there. And history tells us, and this is brilliant, that in a matter of few years, there were actually key members of Caesar's own family who became believers. Why? Because Paul had been attached, handcuffed to Caesar's own guards. And they'd heard about the gospel, so Paul is able to say, what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. You know, at the time, if I was Paul, I'd be complaining. He smells. He speaks Latin. And he's Roman. I'd be complaining. But the bigger picture was that God was doing something key for the future of the gospel and the kingdom of God. You see, my friends, there are things that are going to happen to us that we don't understand. There are experiences in life that we're not going to understand on earth. And we're not going to frankly understand till we're in eternity. So here's some teaching points. How do we use these experiences in life? You know, I think it's right. I love the phrase, and it's certainly in my memory bank. Experiences can either make you bitter or they can make you better. Experiences can either make you bitter or they can make you better. So first of all, there are four steps that you can do. First of all, we need to examine our experiences. Examine your experiences. Look at them. Take time to review them. Think about your life. Don't just live your life. Think about what's happening. The question you want to ask is, what has really happened in my life? What has happened to my life to date? What has really happened in the circumstances and the experiences? And start to look for glimpses of where God is at work. What aspects of your job that you're doing was good? What times and moments in my job were bad? And that's a good clue about what you should do in the future. And the Bible says this is really important. Did all your experiences, Galatians 3 verse 4, mean nothing at all? Surely it meant something. That's a Good News version. So examine your experience. And you know, my friends, and I pondered this just a few days ago, you need to do that in a reflective way. The one thing that we are not having in our society today is downtime. We are not good at reflective time. The whole way in which our 0-60 world is pumping stuff into us is not giving us that opportunity to switch off and to reflect about the bigger pictures of life. We need those times. We need to examine our strengths. We need to examine our failures. What worked, what didn't. Look for a pattern. And Galatians 3 verse 4 from J.B. Phillips says, has all your painful experiences brought you nowhere? For some people that might be true. Because in the end, you're not better, you're bitter. And the bitterness still weighs you down. And so it's that old phrase that history, those who fail to study history are doomed to repeat it. In other words, if we don't learn from our mistakes, we'll simply go on repeating and making those mistakes over and over again. You can't just keep hitting something. And that's really important. I shared in the early service this morning, you know, we can hit the nail again and again, and it's not working. Why? Because the nail's bending. Oh, well, let's put another nail in. We hit it again. It bends. We do it again. It'll go in soon, you know. Oh, we're going over about 50 nails now. It's still not working. Oh, let's just keep going. It'll go there one of these days. Hit it harder. When actually what we need to do is we need to say, these nails are rubbish. Let's use the proper nail. And let's use the right technique. So until we change the method and the equipment and so forth, we're just doomed to repeat the same thing. Now, how is that applying to your life? I think in Christianity, in evangelical ways, we need to say that we're guilty of those kind of methodologies. You know, we say, well, go away and pray harder. You need to pray harder. Yes, you need to pray harder. But you don't need just to pray harder, you also need to reflect healthily so that what we're doing is brought into the light of the gospel so that we do it actually better in the reality of a prayerful, reflective method. And that comes from wisdom, from sharing with others. So first of all, examine. Secondly, we need to extract the lessons you've learned. You look for insights. You look for principles, you look for truths. What can I learn from this experience? Where you're going through situations you don't want to ask why, but what? Don't say, why is this happening to me, God? You may not find the answer to that. So you might find the answer in the question, what do you want me to learn from this, God? Where is God right now? What are you wanting me to learn? And there are two rules in the school of experience, which is this. It's actually called the school of hard knocks. Ever been there? I know I've been there. You know, sometimes the reality of our struggles and our failures are just painfully hard. The first rule is this. If you flunk the test the first time, you keep just taking the test until you pass it. And if you don't learn the lesson and experience, you just keep on doing it until you finally get it right. And if you flunk it, God will give you another chance. And that's the first rule of it, of experience. The second is that just about the time you think you've graduated, God makes you up for a new course. You know, you think, I'm there, God, I'm done. I've passed through the finishing line. And God said, okay, let's move you over to this test now then. Just about the time you think I've matured and I've got it all together, God says, no, you've got a whole lot more to go. I tried to sum this up in my reflection just a few days ago about my own life and thinking that, and I used this not so many years ago, that I feel for me, I would sum up my life as a dynamic plodder. Dynamic plodder. I just need to keep going. Let me tell you about this for a minute. Some of you will know that we're renovating a house in Portland, and I'm currently fitting the kitchen. And so sometimes I go and do that work. And just a few weeks ago, I made an error, a mistake, and I shouldn't have. And I was really, politely put, naffed off, as Ronnie Barker says in Porridge. And the error was, is that as you get to the afternoon and you get through your lunch break of doing your stuff, you look at your watch and think, oh, I've got to get home, I've got to visit the mother and all this kind of thing. And I'll just do this before I go. And it's the danger of rushing a job. Yeah, it's the danger of rushing a job. So I've got this cooker electrical supply. And so I'm thinking, oh, I just do half the job and next time I'll be able to bring it to fruition. So I got my cable cutters out, and I just cut the cable, and then I thought, oh, blung, no, I've cut the cable too short. And this is the cable that I've implanted in the plaster. One of the key things for the electricians, if you've ever done any electrical stuff, is that you should never rush cable cutting, yeah? Never rush. You always allow plenty of cable, because you can't put back on what you've cut off, yeah? And this little electrical socket is being the demon of my installation in this kitchen, to the point where it's actually trying me. And frankly, over the last few weeks, I've come away not in victory, but I've come away in despair. And I'm thinking, I've had enough. I've really had enough. I've really had enough. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I can hear my dad saying, I can hear my voice, the voice of my dad from my childhood, when I had those struggles too, whether it was trying to sort out a problem on my car when I was a teenager, my lovely MGB. And I can hear the voice of my dad saying, in recent weeks, saying, come on, get yourself up. Pull yourself together. You can do this. I know you want to give up. But you need to pull yourself together because you can do this. You can conquer this. Because out of a stupid mistake, you can bring this to goodness and fruition. And so that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing right now. It's like you little socket, little there, small thing, You are not going to conquer me. I am in charge of this. We talk about having authority over pets. I have authority over electrical sockets. And so I say, I will not be conquered by you. I will not be conquered because actually what I hear from my past and what I'm hearing in the strength of my faith is this: keep on going, do not give up. Dynamic plodder. Do not give up. So we need to remember what we have learned. What have you learned in your past? What skill sets have you learned from the experiences you've had? This is key. And the Bible says over and over again, remember, remember, remember. And we need to not give up on remembering. How do you remember? You can write them down. One of the things I do for myself in ministry, which I was encouraged to do some years ago, which is this, is to have a book of blessing. In ministry, many people warned me in ministry years ago, whatever you do, don't go into ministry. It's the worst thing you can do. Don't go into ministry. Well, I went into ministry. And so somebody said one of the things that pastors should do is to keep a book of blessing, which is all the nice things people to say to you, all the nice things that people write to you. I keep and I stick them into my book of blessing. Paula, you have been a blessing to me. Every time you've written me a card that says thank you, you have blessed me, and I've kept those cards, and they're in my book of blessing. And so many of others of you, I can't think right now, but you've written cards of blessing to me, and I keep them in my book of blessing. Helen, you've been a blessing to me, and others here. That I could just go on, and I thank you for that. But I keep the blessing. In the midst of many struggles, I have kept those things. And they remind me that when things get tough, you can go back and look at what you've learned. David, you've been a blessing to me. Others too. The third thing you need to do is you need to exploit the experience of others. Devin, you've been a blessing to me too, and so on. Exploit the experience of others. This is the third thing. And you need to tap into them. Get yourself into a network and learn from people. You know, we're not an island. We're not meant to be people who are isolated on our own. The average person in life learns from experience. The wise person learns from the experience of others. Do you know what others say? Don't do it that way. We learn so that we don't make the same mistake. The fool learns from neither. So it's wise to learn from experience. You know, when we say to children, our little babies, as soon as they start to get mobilized and they find their feet. Yeah, remember those days, parents? Everything goes back into the loft in boxes. Never to be seen again, as your wonderful babies become toddlers. And you say to your baby, you say, don't touch the hot stove. Yeah? You say it again, don't touch the hot stove. But that's just a transient bit of knowledge. All they hear is, don't they? The only way, frankly, that they will ever learn the hot stove is they go up to the hot stove and they burn themselves. And they go, well, I told you so. No, you didn't. All I heard was so, you know, frankly, learning, we can try to learn the experience of others. It takes me back. You know, back to my dad again, forgive me. But dad would always say, don't do it that way. Oh, I told you so. I'm sure my dad used to stand back in anguish and go, I told you not to take the wheel off. That's why the car's just fallen off. So, you know, frankly, and often, you know, in our own human understanding, we don't get there until we say, oh, I told you so. So that one generation is doomed to pass on the failures of the others. So Proverbs 27, though, is verse 17, is key, which is that one that people quote to each other. Mostly men, I think, in my experience. People learn from one another just as iron sharpens iron. Know that one? forgive me, if ladies say it to another, that's good, but it's a very masculine kind of statement. It's axes. Iron sharpens iron. Learn to write, ask the right questions. That's the secret. What would you say, what would you advise about not doing this particular thing? Well, don't do it that way. I would advise go and speak to them. And you can learn from anybody if you just know how to write the right, ask the right questions. I can learn something from anybody because I've learned how to ask questions. Do you have that regret now about school? What was the one thing they told you about school? Well, again, this is what I got told. Don't be afraid to ask questions. What did I do? I'm just going to sit there and I'm going to ask questions. Do you regret now asking questions? I think I do. Well, should I ask loads of questions? The teacher would say, shut up! I want to get on with my lesson. He keeps asking questions. See, God not only plans experiences in your life intentionally, purposefully, and personally, he also brings people into your life for a purpose so that you can learn from them, and the people that were around your life are intentionally put there. I look back at my life, and the people that have come into my life by God's grace have taught me things. They haven't taught me everything, but different people have taught me things where I thought, well, yeah, there's God in that. There's God. God is in what he shared, what she shared. I thank you. Some of those people are now in glory. Some of those people are now in glory. Some of the people actually, in a weird kind of way, have been really quite difficult to me in pastorates. You know, quite honestly, people have done things to me over the years in pastoral ministry. But in a weird kind of way of the grace of God, I can still say I learned something from them. I've learned something from them. They were really quite painful to me, but I've learned something from them. That, my friends, is grace. So we need to exploit the experience of others. Fourthly, we need to employ the experiences to encourage and help other people. Utilize them. Use your experience for the good of other people. Now this, my friend, is where we come back right to the very, very start here. Because I think, like every other church, the church is asleep. It's not that we're not talented. It's not that we haven't got loads of experiences in this church. It's just that we're asleep. Forgive me, there will be some of you who are already using your experiences. But on the whole, these experiences are so caught up within us that we haven't brought them out into the light so that they can be used. You can use the experience you have got to encourage others, and you can use your experience to help others, painful or difficult or whatever. You can use your weaknesses. You can use your struggles. You can use the fact that you haven't really got it sussed. Because I've learned that the more we share our struggles, the more the grace of God is at work amongst us. Years ago, it's not true now, I don't think. Years ago, we used to have a built-in network of families, where when we had struggles, we could go to members of our family, extended members of our family. When we couldn't talk to parents, we could say, do you know, I'm struggling with X, Y, Z, great aunt, great uncle. And we had this built-in support system called family. And if you lived in a community, often that family would be around you in that community because people never journeyed away. On the whole, they were inbuilt. And they would help all members of that family through stages of life. But that's not true anymore. People travel, people go to different parts of the world, and most of you don't live anywhere near your grandparents or your parents or uncles or aunts or uncles. They're spread out all over the place. And we are in this fragmented society today. And we therefore need a new network of support. and of people with these experiences to help through the stages of life, you see? Because we don't have that old family network there. And what is that new support network? It's the church. It is the church. We are the family of God. In Titus 2, in the Bible, it says that the older women are to use their experience to train and encourage and help younger women. Titus, spot on. And in the same chapter in Titus 2, it says that the older men who are more experienced in life, in business, in family, are to use their experience and wisdom to teach and train and encourage younger men. I don't know about you, but when I was in my 20s, and I share this because of an arrogant attitude, the one thing I hated in the Bible was the bit where it said that older people, older men in the church should teach and train the younger ones. It's difficult, actually. It's difficult to be subject to experience. But actually, that is precisely where it needs to be. The massive potential in this room now to share and use our weaknesses, our struggles, and our pain is absolutely there. And if I'm honest with you, the really frustrating thing about me as a pastor to the church is that the untapped wealth of experience sitting in this room right now is going unused. There is incredible talent. There is incredible experience. There are backgrounds that you've had as you've grown up. God's brought us together from all different kinds of backgrounds. It even says it on our sign. A church of all different ages from all kinds of backgrounds. If you're not sure why you're here, now you know. And He shaped us all differently, and God has brought you here. I don't believe you're here by accident. You think you're here because, well, you know, might as well spend a few years here. No, you're here because God intended you to be here. God intentionally brought you to this church family because you have something to offer to this church family, and the family needs you. And as I wrap up, let me just share with you this. Which ministry should you be involved in or based in now? Based on what you've been hearing over the weeks, which ministry? What are you going to do about it? Or are you still sitting on the deck chair on the side of the cruise liner, enjoying the sun? It's time to give something back. Don't waste your life. Somebody has written this. In a world of teeming millions, crowded in on every side, when you feel so bewildered that you want to run and hide, think of Him who counts the sparrows and gives each rainbow a special hue. He counts the hairs you carry, for He made just one like you. When you think no one really cares and feel so incidental that every nice thing done for you is merely accidental, recall the snowflakes you've seen fall. Each one is different. And it's true that to God you're extra special, for He made one just like you. If you've heard you're not important with no special identity, that you're only just a number to be carried out to sea, call to mind that you're His creation. And from the songbirds take a cue. Let the whole world know you're happy, for He made just one like you. And He didn't do it just so you could be unique, my friends. He did it so your life would matter. The worst thing that you could do is to go to your grave at whatever age and say, I still didn't know what I was made for by God. I still didn't know what God intended me to be. Don't go to your grave having wasted your life. Go saying, I knew what God had designed me for. I knew what He called me to. That, my friends, is called ministry. I'm going to ask you to make a commitment this morning. I guess that over the years, I've built in a cynicism to being a preacher. I can stand up here and, as the expression is, wax lyrical till I'm blue in the face. And sometimes I finish a service and I think, I just need to head home because I just need to be quiet. Whether I make any difference, I don't know. My friend Andrew Wallace, who's lives in Taunton, says that he too had been for many years a traveler on the cruise liner on a deck chair. Until one Sunday, having listened to a great sermon, he went up to the minister. It's a minister known to a number of us, actually, in this church. And he preached a good sermon, and he said, thank you so much. Andrew said to the preacher, thank you so much for what you said this morning. It's really superb and lovely and so forth. And the preacher turned to him, the minister turned to him and said, so what are you going to do about it? What are you, Andrew, going to do about it? And Andrew felt so uncomfortable because for the first time he had been held to account by the ministry of the word. I'd like to say this morning, it doesn't matter to me what you do. I can be free, you can be free. It doesn't matter to me. Except that it does matter to me. For me, ministry is always personal. That's why I don't buy into this letter business, by the way. When people write letters, they it's not personal. It's always personal. And it's personal to me that the response you make this morning to this series about God calling you to ministry, that you do something about it, for goodness sake. Don't sit on the edge on your seat on a vessel called the Titanic. Sit on a vessel that is ready to go to war. Sit on a battleship. You need a ministry and you need a mission. The people of God are not meant to be sleeping. The people of God are meant to be equipped to go to war. How are you going to use what God has given you? There. I've done my bit. I'll go home. Except I haven't. Because I need you to prayerfully make a commitment to go and say, I will do something about this. In 2019, I will quit playing with God. And I will take up the mantle of doing something with my life that is significant. May it be that this is so. As David and those who are singing take their place, I'd like to pray for you. Come, Spirit of God, that what has been may only have been from you, but may it not be tickling our ears, but may it be seed from the sower. And bread for the eater. Seed from the sower. And bread for the eater. May we not waste our time. May we not waste our lives.